You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Good morning. Wow. It has been a while. You've been listening to archives this last week. I've got so much to tell you. I don't even know where to begin. This is Dr. Michelle. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. 573-4BREAD-4 is our phone number for any questions or comments or concerns or thoughts or suggestions, anything you have. You can archive or find the archives for just about anything that I've done or anyone else who does, who is a contributor on Breadbox Media by going to breadboxmedia.podbean.com. You can also become a friend of the show by going on to breadboxmedia.com, I think. Alex, help me. All right, so I'm totally jet lagged, worn out, have had quite the last couple weeks, actually. So where do I even start? Do I start now and go backward, or do I start then and come forward? Well, I'll do this. Today I want to talk about not the difference. You know how when someone says he was a liar and a thief? We're going to talk a little bit about how lying, that's redundant, that lying is thievery. We're going to talk about that. It's really important to know, because in this moment of time where everything, no matter which area, your arena you're in, the concept of lying or lying by omission, which I think probably has been wiped out of our colloquial speech, is not even something we think about. It's not even justified. It's a matter of course, whether it's in the business world, the marital world, the relationship world, the news world, the political world. I told you my famous one that my hair falls out over, and my hair is falling out. So, and that is what happened in and now is an institution here in California. It's not back in Kentucky where I was a little while ago. And that is that to help the environment with big signs, we're doing our part, and it was voted in by the people, the state of California, because their hearts are in the place of save the earth, that we need to save this earth. And so you have the right picture, the right moment. I'm not saying that what I'm going to tell you doesn't help in some way, but let's break it down. So I talked about this, I don't know, a few weeks ago. It's the concept that the giant grocery chains that own everything just about now, as far as grocery stores, all the large grocery store mini chains have been bought up by some great big groups. Kroger is one of them. I go to Kroger. I'm not downing Kroger. However, then other places have followed suit. So you go into your groceries, and somebody who's 95 goes in for their groceries, or someone who's got four kids goes in with their groceries, or I go in for my groceries, and you have to pay 10 cents a bag if you want a bag. And the reason that came about is that there are great big signs everywhere. We're doing our part. We're saving the environment. We're going to get rid of all the bags so you can no longer put your groceries in bags. If we back up, sure, chances are may help somewhere along the line. But the reality is those bags cost money. And each large store brings in pallet after pallet of bags each week. And they usually are from recycled material. But they bring in the bags and they bag your bags. And you think if you have so many millions of people throughout the United States bagging 5 and 6 bags worth of groceries, that's a lot that it costs the grocery store. But instead of saying we want to save money because we want to go to another country too, and we want to expand and we just want to get richer, which is part of it, the idea is it kind of turns it. So there's a little bit of the truth along with enlisting you in a naivete. Now, I could be shot for that, maybe, because yes, there is something to say for every little bit. A journey of 1,000 miles begins with a simple step. But you have to look at the source. You have to look at the outcome. You have to look at what has happened, how quickly it happened. And then you have to watch people stumble. They forget their reusable bags, and their reusable bags are now harboring all kinds of bacteria because they put their chicken in their reusable bag and their produce in their reusable bag. And again, as I keep saying, probably like the crazy lady that everyone thinks I am, as I'm checking out, I'm saying, you know, really look at everything I just bought. There isn't one thing that isn't in plastic. That's just it. And the person goes, gee, I never thought of that, but what would they put them in? But the point is that if we really, really wanted to make a shove, we would look at all the realities of our environment, all the things we're doing to poison it, all the things that would make huge impacts, all the hormone disruptors that are going in your water bottles and going in your children's lunch bags and evidently the receipts even, that if you put hand, I just read a medical thing the other day, that if someone puts on hand lotion or hand sanitizer and handles a receipt, you're going to get more BPA in your system, even a few, I think it was a couple hundred times more than you would if you hadn't put the hand sanitizer or the lotion on first. And then you think of all the people who hand receipts out all day long. So we have so many things, and we kind of get sound bit, and we kind of go to these little sound bites. Now, that will extrapolate into the things I want to talk about too that are very dear to my heart. And one of those is what is happening to our elderly. Which is going to be you and me, believe it or not, sooner rather than later. And how some of the sins of omission impact them greatly, and yet it gets buried. You never see it. How there's never, things aren't being taught and handed down. One more little piece of a puzzle that you'll see will come together throughout the show is that wonderful thing that was said to me 30 years ago when someone came to my own office from a large, or at that point, not as large, managed care company. And they had to like woo the doctors then. Not all doctors didn't. It was new. They had to come from somewhere. There was a time before managed care. And the person was like talking to me and, you know, giving me all these ideas of, well, why shouldn't you make as much money as a surgeon? And I had a great answer for that because I don't take that risk. I didn't train the extra 5 years to be a surgeon. I'm not a surgeon. I let them do that. You know, to me, I'm not worried about that. They should make what they make. But after we're talking, I just said, you know, this just doesn't make sense to me. I cannot imagine how I'm going to be able to still see the same number of patients, which at that time was 8 or 9, per day, spend the time I want, get to know them in 5 years from now. And this is what the woman said to me. And this is what I want you to take home. She said, we were told in our sales meeting that the old ones will either die or retire, and the young ones coming up will not know the difference. So there you go, my friends. This is the thing I want to take home. If you refrain from informing, if you just allow something to dissolve, the keepers of the knowledge, I mean, it sounds like Lord of the Rings, but the keepers of the knowledge will soon either become obsolete, discredited, demeaned. The knowledge will be forgotten. The music will be forgotten. The passion behind it will be forgotten. And then we can teach our children something different. It is really a very simple thing. And there are whole governments that have worked on those premises. The old ones, we get rid of the old ones in whatever way we can. And the young ones coming up won't know the difference. How could you know the difference? How could you know the difference? You couldn't. So we're going to talk about how that relates to the most simple things in our life, different things that you can do, that you can't catch everything. It's a big avalanche out there. But the things that you can do in your own life, your own family, your own relationships, to kind of perk up your ears a little bit and be aware of what something might sound like, how to follow your gut a little bit more, how to raise, polish up those antennas a little bit, how to, some of the pitfalls, and also how to fine tune yourself a little bit, because it's not an easy thing to do, especially if we don't have the background knowledge. It's not an easy thing to do to question authority when they're showing you regulations and they're showing you medicines, or they're showing you what most people do, or they're showing you what all kids should be doing at this particular time in life, when they show you what they say is evidence of, let's say, an autistic spectrum. Not saying there is no autistic spectrum, but the trouble with a spectrum of anything, there's no defining, it never ends. A spectrum does not end, because it keeps bleeding into the next, into the next, into the next, and there's no defined borders for that spectrum. So we're going to talk about all that. I'm going to give you some really black and white situations that happened to me, happened to my father in the last couple weeks. And we're also, without giving you exact medical advice, I'm going to share with you why it's kind of a good idea to take advantage of everything, the natural and also our mainstream medicine as well. So as always, I am Dr. Michelle. You're walking with me today on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4-BREAD-4. I'm so happy to be back with you. I missed you so much. I hope you all took advantage of taking a look at Rugged Rosaries, which are amazingly awesome. We'll talk about all that and more on the other side of the break. I am your host, Dr. Michelle.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You're walking with me on Dr. Michelle Live. I am so happy, I just am, to be back with you. It's been a very long few weeks. So where do I start? Diving into these seemingly unrelated situations and going into something that we can take home, something that can help you, that can help me as we go about our day, we talk to people. First, going back to this idea of he is a liar and a thief, and how that is a redundant thing. And that when there is a lie, when there's a lie of omission, when there's a lie outright, when there's a lie of deception, betrayal. I think I told you before that wonderful gentleman who we were talking about something. I don't even remember what it was. And he said, betrayal of love is the worst, is the most diabolical. And this man is not a particularly religious person, but it hit me, because it's really right. That when you betray love, when you betray the trust that you have in someone that you love, God is love. So it's betrayal of God. If you profess to love someone, you're professing right there to invoke God, because God is love. So it's like, you know, if I can't think of an example right now, I'm a little jet lagged, but, so, you know, it's the idea is that the betrayal that happens, the brokenness, the shattering, you are committing a death. And what you're thieving a person of when you lie, or what you have been robbed of when a lie has been handed to you, is your dignity, your humanity, your ability to trust, you've robbed someone of responding to the truth. To the truth. And when you take away the truth, you take away hope. And when you take away the truth, you take away love. Because the truth, the love is truth. And I know I'm feeling like I'm going these little tiny circles, but think about it for a minute. Think about it. We're human. We start out, no, I didn't take that cookie. I didn't eat that cookie. I don't know who did it. A monster came and ate it. And then the little things like, oh yeah, I'm going to go study tonight, Dad. And you're not, you're out with your friends, or you don't want your parents to know something. I several times was asked to speak to a Catholic girls' school class, sophomore class. And I said, okay, I will do that. But why don't you have them all write out their questions that they have for me and put them in a manila envelope that will be completely anonymous, and let me see them a week before I come for my talk. And it was very instructive, because almost without exception, every single one of them is, knowing that I was then not a psychiatrist, but a general practitioner, how do we get birth control pills without my parents knowing? If I go into a doctor, do they have to tell my parents? How do I do this without my parents knowing? How do I do that without my parents knowing? How do I do? I mean, it was without exception. Their focus was on something that they were determined to get and determined to do, because that's just what they thought justified to do. And we start out that way. Now, again, some of these things, it's part of our teaching. It's part of our learning as we grow and live. We're very young. We don't have frames of reference. We don't have a history to watch the devastation behind us. We're on the horse running fast, and the dust is covering up, is billowing up behind us when we're very young. And so everything is new and fresh, and your clothes aren't tattered, and your skin's not weathered, and your eyes are working, and you're not thirsty, and you're just running as, you know, you're just galloping around. But there's a point in the path where the horse just goes, I'm stopping here. Can't go on anymore right now. Let's put our little hooves and stop. And you see the dust billows, and then all of a sudden it clears, and you see all the things that you trampled and ran over, or the things that you were trampled and run over. Because what happens is, even though there is forgiveness, there still is pain, sorrow, destruction. And lying is a very destructive thing. So you do rob the other human being, or you have been robbed when you have been lied to. When a child is lied to, when an adult is lied to, when a spouse is lied to, when a girlfriend or boyfriend is lied to, it's all very difficult. And sometimes we do things, it's not so much a lie, because intention is part of the word lie. At least it is for me. So if someone says something that isn't true because they're repeating what they've heard or what they learned, or because it makes sense to them, that's not necessarily a lie. It's not a lie. We have many words that would form that, but lie would not be one of them. Because a lie implies intent. A lie implies intent to deceive. So, and then there are times when you do that for, you know, with distracting your child. You know, we have to give that back now because we have to go walk over here, you know, or whatever we say at the time. So again, it's not so much that that is a lie. And sometimes we do things for others' protection, but it's very slippery, very slippery. So a lot of this is about what we discern, why we have confession, why we do these things. But now let's get back to some practical black and white matters. So when taking in the example I gave you of the grocery store, when you feel and you're being supported and you're given accolades for doing something that's going to help humanity. But the real reason that, and again, I'm not saying this is the real reason, because I can't say who decided to do this in that giant conglomeration, but my guess is probably pretty well supported, that if a huge giant corporation that is taking over all grocery chains, as many as they can, eating them up, and having everything all over the globe of their store chains encased in in environment destroying plastic and seagull harming plastic wrappers and all kinds of things, just saying we won't give you bags anymore because we want to save the environment does not make very much sense. We're going to make you pay for them, even though you pay for them anyway, because we already added that in the cost, but we're not going to have to buy them anymore. And again, what are we talking about here? Wouldn't it be nice for somebody to take a look at how these things can be modified? We have the technology, plus most of them are made out of recycled material. So again, I'm not saying that we should have bags or shouldn't have bags. I'm just saying we don't get the truth. So what does that do? Something so ridiculous, it sounds like. I'm just going through and looking at the at minutiae in light of everything that's going on in the world. Well, just like we say a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step, so does mining for the truth that will set you free and the truth that will protect you. It's like the old adage you used to see. It was another one of my little pet peeves of to serve you better. And every time I saw to serve you better, at first, I believed them. To serve you better, we're going to make it so you can't find the exit out of our store or whatever it is. To serve you better, we've done something that really only benefits their growth. But at first, I believed them. You know, hey, this is cool. They really, the customer is always right. Well, then you start realizing that's not true. It isn't true. It's not, nothing served me better in those situations. It only made me stay there longer, gave me more confusion and increased prices. So when you have to start thinking, maybe I better think a little bit more. Maybe I better just take it, non-accusatory, just take it, listen, watch, and let my own discernment, whether I talk it over with someone, whether I pray, offer it up, I don't get this, it's bigger than me, I'll never know it. If someone wants to deceive, they're going to deceive. If someone wants to break in your house, they're going to break into your house. They're going to watch it. They're going to do whatever. This is how this stuff works, how mountain lions do things. That's how predators do things. They watch, they wait, they find, and then they just keep on watching, waiting until it's time, and then they get the environment right for them. So let's relate this now to some experiences I had with my father. So my father decided to move after my mother passed, and because of despondency and sadness, and he moved quite far away. And it's been difficult. It really has been difficult. And he had lived in a place that he loved. And this place, although I suppose if we all sat down and had read the fine print, did not have the policy that once you're in, and that you're kind of there until you go. In other words, if you rent a house, unless you harm that house, chances are whatever happens to you in that house happens to you. People all the time are in housing rentals and they something happens and they die and someone comes in and that's it. Or they are in their wheelchair or they're wherever they are. And there's certain regulations. You can endanger the person, and that's true. But it's the way that things are done and presented. And so my father, who was getting very ill because a couple of appointments had been missed, had some very dire consequences occur that I dealt with while I was there. So I will describe those to you, and maybe you can prevent something in your family in the future. We will see you on the other side of the break. I am Dr. Michelle.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
welcome back. I'm your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are listening to Dr. Michelle Live, walking with me today. A little jet lagged, a little out of it, but so where are we going with all of this? All right, so this is what happened. So my father misses a couple of appointments to a physician. They arrange them. Somebody dropped the ball, the driver at the last minute. Something happened. Actually, that happened to me going out there because I'm already at 4:30 in the morning and no shuttle. So these things do happen, but you have this kind of domino effect. And so that even though it happened, the appointment was never rescheduled. So he ends up in the hospital. And he ends up in the hospital, very, very sick in excruciating pain. I think he has meningitis. Well, the missed appointment, he indeed had an infection. The missed appointment caused the infection to go all throughout his body. And he had an infection in the blood and an infection. It was just unbelievable. They thought he had meningitis, but they couldn't test him because he couldn't lay flat. And it was just, you know, one of these things, one after another. And he did survive it. They didn't think he was going to survive. So while all this is happening, he gets evicted. Why does he get evicted? He gets evicted because the last time they assessed him, he was not able to transfer from his, wherever he was, to his wheelchair. And my father is extremely elderly. Longevity is a big deal. I mean, he's got it. And we have to deal with the situation, and there's no two ways about it. And both so we are rather educated in one of the family members is extremely educated in the regulations of that state for knows someone who knows all the places where the elderly live, both the nursing homes, all the care facilities, the rehabs, and also the assisted livings and the apartments for the elderly. And sure, they were within their regulations. But they evicted him. So they evict him while he's in an emergency room. You have a 90-some-year-old man who is in excruciating pain. And again, he made the choice. And I mentioned to him when he was leaving, I said, you know, I'm out here because of you and mom. So, you know, right now I can't move back there. But he chose to do it. And that was a little while ago. And we're trying to change all that, but you know, it's what it is. Now, a lot of things could have been prevented with that by having a family structure that allowed for a family that pitched in, and some people don't have families. Some people, the family has died before they have, or they never had children, or whatever happens. Or they just decide to move. A lot of faithful, Catholic, non-Catholic, loving, stable people go places and stay together. And you might have, and you know this well in a lot of these smaller towns or Midwestern towns where a lot of them come together and it's just amazing. It's amazing. And of course, everywhere they do that. Cities, they do. However, you also see the reverse of that where people are there and they're just, it's a disaster. So everybody's on outs with everybody else. It's a sad state of affairs. We talk about all the time. And as we're going into Lent, it might be a really good time to reflect upon pulling back and seeing, you know, where are we going with this? How do we follow this through? How do we look at what we want to believe and what sounds good? And maybe opening our eyes, and it's not a fault because unless you're in that business, you really don't get a chance to see the other side. That's the hard part. When I was in training, they used to call it, one woman, an attending physician on child psychiatry, used to call it that we all had what she called dirty knowledge. And what that meant is that we'd already seen the outcome of so many things, that someone going into the hospital has no experience with, because this is their first exposure to what's happening to them or what's happening to their loved one. But we see it over and over. A good example is the early days of AIDS. It was pretty, there was a few courses that that people with AIDS would go. And there's a certain things that would usually occur, and they usually only lived a year and a half. So we kind of saw this over and over and over again. So we kind of had an idea, not that we projected that that's what will happen, but we saw it so often. And that's why, a little aside, your doctor or your healthcare provider will tell you something like, well, you've only got so much time, or you've only got this, you've only got that, because they just see the whole spectrum. And again, what's in a spectrum? Well, too many people around are writing letters to their physicians 20 years after they were told they had 5 years to live. So, you know, you have so many opportunities for healing and wellness, and not everybody will. Children die. They do. So this is part of our life. But now we'll get back to the concept of what we can do, though. Since you are limited, many people are limited. I mean, it's a privilege, but it's also a burden to have some of this inside information, only because you've seen it, not that you have a secret information other people don't have. But as you're going through and you're seeing these patterns, and even with us, we're very educated in this system. I've worked in many a place and trained in many a place with elderly and on elderly wards and in elderly, nursing homes and things like that. And yet I never saw that part of it. I never saw the part where they don't want someone who looks very old and frail in a wheelchair in their lobby. And yet, what do some of the caregivers say? Some of the caregivers who are right there say, oh yeah, we overhear them talking all the time. They don't want that person in the lobby because someone else coming in looking at the place will associate that that's where they're going to be. That's only human nature. So there's all these different motivations. It is not saying, and again, this is where we get so confused. This is why teach your children well and keep yourself open to discovery. This is my big push, the power of discovery, of constantly opening up to learn, not necessarily from a book or from Yahoo or Google, where I learn a lot of things, but opening up to experience, interaction, experience, and being able to not separate yourself, realize that we have a tendency to separate ourselves from the experience until we're there. I remember when I took my brother to the doctors when he had AIDS and he was starting to get weak, and he was young and very handsome and very talented. And I saw him in that little gown, and I just flashed on all the people that I had seen in those little gowns and all the looks and the feelings of helplessness that sometimes they had on their faces. They were disarmed because they're there in a little gown with nothing around them, dependent upon, is this something or is this nothing? Am I to be scared or am I okay? And I've had even those experiences myself. So those things are, it's called compassion. It's called empathy. So someone who has a job to say, well, these are the regulations and this is how we have to do it. And you just evict somebody when they're in the hospital with the good likelihood that at that age, they probably won't come out of the hospital, but he did. But he has nowhere, where is he going back to? As far as they're concerned, he has nowhere to go. It's not their problem. Now, as far as we're concerned, that's not the truth. But as long as we follow the regs, there he is. Please get his stuff out in 10 days. I think he had 30 days. But it was 30 days from when they sent out the notices, which none of us had gotten. So the point is that this is a place that about 6 months before, I would have, no, I can't say that because that this is the same thing started. They started trying to do this a while back, but I would have just said it was the best place in the world. Very happy there. And the people were amazing. But the state regulations aren't amazing. They make no provision. There's a cutoff point. You're at the cutoff point. You happen to be in the emergency room with possible meningitis. Too bad. Now I sound bitter and cynical. Well, I am. I'm very angry at the situation. And here's the power. It happened in my own family. It happens with people I know. It happens with my own patients. It happens with their families. Your heart and your soul are soul woven around the survival and the goodness and the care and the, you know, what did we miss? What are we not seeing? What happened here? Maybe we were going down the wrong path. Maybe we should have provided here, you know, just the whole deal. And then dealing with this step forward, the important emotional things in life, you just let those things go for the next person and the next person and the next person. And most people are going to just take it in a little basket and go, because what can you do? So the story's not finished yet on what will happen. He will certainly have to find, well, he will be in a different place. But I want to make you aware. It's just my personal story. I want you to make you aware of, without indicting anyone, because no doubt, and I know some of the people who did the eviction, they aren't hideous, horrible people, you know, wringing their hands and cackling. They're good, decent people who go to church and who have families. They're doing what their job describes. They're following their job description. But they somehow, in that reality, have been able to not put themselves in someone else's place, which is, or their loved one's place, which is the definition of empathy. Or if they have, they've learned to turn it off. So we're going to talk a little bit about how to counteract some of that in yourself and in others. And also, we're going to read a couple little things from Psalms as well to help us on our way. This is Dr. Michelle. See you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. We're walking this road together on Dr. Michelle Live. You can email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com, anytime you would like. Back to my story and how this applies to you and how it's a constantly evolving landscape for me. This isn't new for me. These mistakes aren't new for me. I willingly took so much of things that were just handed, even though something in my gut said, whether it was for my dad, for my brother, for my other people in my family who have died, or myself, willingly just taking it. Like, oh, well, there must, you know, yeah, this is what I have to do, or I get this, or trying to look at the whole picture. And in some respects, you do look at the whole picture and say, yeah, I get why this stuff was done. However, its execution can be manipulated or can be used for other ulterior purposes. And in the business of any business you're in, you start to get a feel for the ulterior purposes. Whether it's grocery chains or huge hospitals, it is not. And who gets blamed? The waitress gets blamed for the cold food, you know, or for the poor quality of the ingredients in a restaurant. If the waitress didn't do it, some doctors are there doing the best that they know how to do. But the young ones, what did I say in the beginning? The young ones, as it was told in their sales meeting, the old ones either die or retire, and the young ones coming up don't know the difference. So if you're taught this is what it is, and you don't have a history behind you, that's why history is important, you are doomed to repeat insensitivity. You are doomed to repeat lack of empathy. When you hear the adage, I can't tell you, in the last 3 weeks, I think I've heard three times people, my own family members, going, well, that's business. Well, what does that mean? That's business. That's business. They evicted somebody in their 90s while they're in the hospital. That's business. Yes, it is business. that may be business. I mean, the rules are rules. There were rules about slavery. There were rules about women not voting. There's rules about all kinds of things. Those were the rules. But people said, well, that's not really very good. We're going to have to change those rules. And if you don't want to change it, we're going to have to change it very strongly. Our own neurodevelopmentally disabled people in this country. Terrible conditions. It was the only way they knew how to do things. But the abuses were huge. The things that could be done in the dark. Someone who I knew who was a writer for corporations. She was a corporate writer all over the world. She would go to India. She'd go forever. And she would just write like executives, whatever they wrote, things for their companies. And in one of her books, there was a quote, famous quote, which I do not remember said it, that character comes out in the dark. And she would, it was there in their textbooks for business writing for someone else. But character comes out in the dark. And this was long before we have such huge evidence that that's true with trolling and all that, where people can come out and just be the ugliest of humanity can come out because it's in the dark. If they had to actually look at the person face to face, come out of their basements and look face to face, it would be something different. Same thing in all these different arenas. So where this story is going is that when your gut starts to feel something, think about it. Wonder about it. Wonder what you can do. You do have to pick your battles. What's worth fighting, what isn't. But surely there's something internally that we can learn. I can learn. You can learn from these kinds of situations. Now, along with that, this is going to be a little, public service opinion. This is not medical advice in any way, shape, or form. Trust me, it is not. So you need to always go by what your needs are, what your professionals are saying, and look at the whole picture. This is an opinion program, an educational program, but an education of my opinion. and my experience, I share this with you. I share this with you because I love it when people share experiences with me, because that's, I just go, oh, wow, wow. You're showing me, you're opening up a window to a world I don't know, which is you. I don't know that world. You look at it this way. I don't look at it this way. That's where these little angels come from. So I'm going to give you another little public service announcement, and it may only be the experience of one, which is me. But there is a medication that they're called proton pump inhibitors. One of them is called Protonix is a major one, and it works. It really works. And oftentimes people who are in the hospital are put on it what's called prophylactically. And what that means is they're put on it on these medications so that they do not develop ulcerations, or they have ulcerations, which can be deadly. You do not want a bleed, you know, in your stomach, or you don't want to keep taking medications that are going to be eroding the lining of your stomach, and then you bleed and then that's it. It's very dangerous. So you want to be on these if you have to be on them. However, I started noticing way back 10 years ago when my father had a surgery and he was put on this medication. I didn't even think about it. And when he came out of the surgery, he had these symptoms. He was home, but he was kind of not steady in his walking. He was a little demented and he was incontinent. This was very unusual for him. It hadn't happened before. It wasn't happening before the surgery. So it could mean many things. Could mean stroke, could mean infection. It could mean just recuperation. It could mean a nutritional deficiency. It could mean anything. So I look and see, okay, what's the medicines? What's different? Well, this one medication was different. So we said, let's take them off. Looked at the side effects, and that was one small, very tiny percentage of people. Took them off. Within 2 weeks, he was resolved. Gait was fine. He was walking fine. Just his old ornery together self, and no more incontinence. So the next time I was in the hospital, same thing happened. So this happened. She wasn't in the hospital that much. So it happened over probably four times in a period of maybe 7 years. So this last round, with all the things that were happening, he's so ill, not able to eat. He was incredibly sick. He needs 2 months of antibiotics, 3 months of antibiotics. And, but he started, he wasn't himself. His brain was not working well. He was becoming incontinent. We don't know whether he could walk or not because he was in too much pain. So he wasn't even getting up and he was too weak. And I looked at the medications and they had started them in the hospital. I had mentioned something, but I didn't follow it through. I knew to mention it, but I got sidetracked. So I mentioned it in the hospital. Don't want him on that if at all possible. But somehow that got lost and I didn't follow up. But most people don't know to do this. So here we go 3 weeks later and he's already in rehab. And someone said, well, he was incontinent today. And I thought, wait a minute, I better check the medicines. So I go and check them and sure enough, there they are. So I said, hey, if it's not absolutely necessary, if it's not a life or death, if it's not keeping him survive, if it's not important, let's try him off. So we did. Cleared up. He cleared up. He's still very frail, very weak, but he cleared up. So all this I want to tell you is sometimes when you have a group of people like children or like the elderly, who's not going to think someone in their 90s is just normal for them to be a little demented or have some incontinence or be not good on their feet? When really it, but what's the index of suspicion? The index of suspicion is they weren't like that before this problem. So something made him this way. And there are certain, only so many things that can make them that way. There are many things, but they're only, you know, you can look at the most likely: stroke, infection, malnutrition, nutritional deficiency, electrolyte deficiency. Something is wrong. And if all those other things come back okay, or then what else? What else is going on? Look at the medicines. But even when I brought it to the attention of one of the social workers and the dietitian, they said, yeah, everybody on here is on that. So you have to really watch. And you may not be able to know everything. You can't beat yourself up. I mean, I can be beating myself up all day long, and I kind of do. But the whole point here is that when you have a little bit of a little moment of clarity, don't assume that everything is exactly the way it's presented to you. If you know that all your experience tells you a person is a certain way, and then in a very short time they become suddenly something different, explore it, and for yourself too. Engender your empathy. Take a moment to look at your empathy as we're going into Lent, because I want to talk about the whole concept of the passion, the whole concept of how quickly it is to turn from and wipe out your ability to empathize as we go on to this, and what we can do to regain that in ourselves, our children, our relationship, and to live a happier, fuller, and more free life. So we're going to be going into that tomorrow. Please join me. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. We will see you tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.